Since March 2009, the Pharmacy Podcast has been developing content monthly, weekly, and daily for the business of pharmacy. With more than 25 different podcast channels, more than 1 million downloads, and 30-plus participating pharmacists, the Pharmacy Podcast Network is the global leader in podcasting for the pharmacy professional. Find all of our podcast channels by going to pharmacypodcast.com/shows.
You're listening to the Lux Pharmacist Podcast, a place where individuality, passion, and dedication are right at home. Here for those of you who are seeking inspiration and chasing their dreams and insights into the day-to-day life of a modern woman in pharmacy. Your host is an entrepreneurial pharmacist, a pharmacy advocate, and founder of the Lux Pharmacist. Welcome to the Lux Pharmacist Podcast, part of the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
Hi there. Happy October. I absolutely love this time of year. Fall is one of my favorite seasons, and October is always such an exciting month in pharmacy. So grab yourself a pumpkin spice latte and get cozy, because today's episode is on my most requested topic ever, residency. Today, I am so excited to announce the launch of my residency series on the Lux Pharmacist Podcast. Residency is the number one topic that I consistently get asked about, and it's such a huge topic that not only does it deserve its own series, but I also thought, what better way to discuss pharmacy residencies than through a podcast where I literally get to talk to you all as if we're one-on-one like besties. Because we are, right? I mean, I like to think so. We're all in this family together, and I really wanted to do this subject justice for you guys and give it the detail and depth that it really required. And when I actually polled all of you for questions, because this podcast was secretly in the works in the background, I realized that a lot of people didn't know exactly what a residency was, you know, what it entailed, and why someone may choose to complete a residency over going for other jobs. So, for the first episode of my residency series, we are going to be starting from the very beginning, covering all the bases when it comes to a PGY1 pharmacy residency. This is essentially residency 101. And since we're starting from the very beginning, it seems only fitting to answer this very basic question: what exactly is a pharmacy residency? Essentially, in the fewest words possible, it's an extra year of clinical training. So pharmacy residents have their degree. We are full-fledged pharmacists. We're just in a job that is specifically designed to continue that educational process. And the majority of people who apply for residencies are applying during their last year of school. But there are those that have a job as a pharmacist somewhere and then decide to do a residency later on. But due to the way that residencies are set up, the application process does only happen once a year, so you can't just like decide to do a residency whenever you want to. And the way that pharmacy residencies are set up are very similar to a medical residency. I think that's always like a helpful comparison, except where as a medical residency is required for all graduates to go into, a pharmacy residency is not. You can graduate with your PharmD and simply start working if you chose to. Like I said before, some pharmacists will start in retail, for example, and then in a few years decide to do a residency. So what's the whole point, right? If you can just start working and making the big bucks right away, why not do that instead? And why choose to leave a high-paying job and take a pay cut to essentially less than half of your salary? And that actually brings up a question that I was asked when I polled all of you for residency questions. I was asked if there was any kind of a pay difference between like going into retail and doing a residency. So yes, there is, just to put that question to rest. It really is less than half. I don't know the exact average for a residency, but let's call it like $45,000 a year, and going into retail, just based on, you know, what I know some of my friends are making, that average is definitely probably a little over $100,000. So yes, there is a real pay difference. Let's just put that one to bed and move on. So with this huge pay difference and, you know, the extra workload that comes on top of that, why are so many of us choosing to do a residency? And the simple answer may be, you know, well, good luck getting a clinical pharmacist position without a residency. And I do know that that was, you know, at least the case where I was practicing in the Northeast throughout my appy year, my last year of school. I was kind of at points battling with, you know, well, do I really want to make that much, you know, less money? And I have all these loans, and just kind of battling with like, what are my true options after school? And with talking with a lot of my preceptors and just pharmacists out there in general, it was very apparent that, you know, I wasn't going to be in that clinical pharmacist position that I really wanted to be, at least for many, many years without doing a residency. And honestly, at times that was a little frustrating to me because I felt like I was a great student and I knew so much and I felt like I was very capable of going into that role. But now that I'm in a residency and I see how much I truly do not know and how beneficial this year is for me, I think it just brings up such a good point that a residency is so much more than, you know, just having to do one and just like this system where, oh, like we want to pay you less and we want you to go into residency. No, it is so much more than that. And I really do think that it is necessary. And this topic was also actually addressed in the ASHP's 2019 pharmacy forecast. They talked about how most of the pharmacists that they polled nationwide did not believe that graduates would be prepared for the frontline health system pharmacy practice, which essentially is clinical pharmacy. So I do believe that this thought is a nationwide consensus. And, you know, it's not just, oh, the Northeast is a little more saturated, so everyone has to do a residency. It really is necessary just to become a competent clinical pharmacist. I mean, practice, real life patient practice is so much different than it is in school. And you really truly will not be prepared to handle all of that without doing a PGY1 residency. So to summarize my whole point here on why someone would choose to do a residency over another job, if you are a pharmacist or a pharmacy student out there and you are interested in clinical pharmacy specifically, then you would choose to pursue a PGY1 residency to receive that extra training that's needed for the field, you know, not just because someone tells you that you have to or thinking, you know, it's just the way the job market is. We really do it because it makes us a well-rounded pharmacist, and it really prepares us to be on the front lines of real life complex patient care and to really fulfill that role. So that's that. We've answered the first basic question, you know, what is a pharmacy residency? Why would you do one? The other thing I really want to talk about is just how the residency year is set up in general and what kind of activities we're involved in. All PGY1 residencies in general are pretty similar because they're all following certain standards that are set forth by ASHP. And in general, there's three main components to a residency. So you have your rotations, obviously, you have staffing, and you also have a year-long residency project. All residencies that you come across will include all three of those things. And since they're set up so similarly across programs, I'm just going to be kind of describing how my program is set up. And then if there's any huge differences that I've seen just from my own experience looking at different programs, I will mention that as well. Before I get into those three components that I did just mention, I do want to say just kind of the difference between PGY1 residency, and you may also hear of a PGY2 residency. So you do obviously have to do a PGY1, which is post-grad year one, before you could pursue a PGY2. But in general, PGY1s are mainly this inpatient pharmacy residency that are really focusing on a bunch of different inpatient specialties. But you do have some residencies. We actually have one at my hospital that are community PGY1 pharmacy residencies. So those are more outpatient focused. A lot of the times they would lead you into maybe a PGY2 in ambulatory care. But in general, they are in the outpatient pharmacy and just focused on more outpatient activities in general. I have heard of, though, some programs that are still PGY1s, but that maybe are more focused in ambulatory care. So again, focusing on some more outpatient things. But in general, the biggest, I guess, option that you'll see for a PGY1 residency is that inpatient focus where you rotate through a bunch of different specialties. In general, no matter what type of residency we're talking about, they're all going to start off with an orientation period, just like how any other new job would start off with. I mean, you can't just walk into a place and know exactly how everything works and be functioning. So for us, our block of orientation was 6 weeks. I know some programs that are only 4 weeks, so it's just going to differ. But during that time period, we were getting used to the hospital policies, what our staffing would look like, you know, what the electronic health system is like. So how I verify the medications, how I look through their profiles, where I can find labs, just kind of getting used to everything. And right after our orientation period ended, we moved right into our clinical rotations. Again, which clinical rotations you have offered are going to differ program to program and just will differ, you know, based on what that hospital has to offer for patients in general. And then how the rotations are set up are also going to differ. So some programs may have longitudinal rotations, which means you're kind of doing them throughout the year. Others of them are going to have maybe only block rotations, which means you do one, you do the next one, you do the next one, and nothing is kind of all year long. But my program in general is a combination of block rotations and longitudinal rotations. To give you some examples of what is offered at my program for block rotations, we have antimicrobial stewardship, we have cardiology, emergency medicine, general medicine 1 and general medicine 2, critical care 1 and critical care 2, and psychology. Those are all block rotations. And then for longitudinal rotations, I have talked about this in an Instagram post. We have the Hope Dispensary, which isn't all year long. That's only 12 weeks. But the year-long longitudinals that I do have include a leadership rotation and a drug information rotation. And then obviously my research project is kind of considered a longitudinal rotation as well. And then another thing that most programs are going to offer in terms of rotations are electives. So for us, we have four that we can choose from. We could go into the outpatient pharmacy, we could do oncology, we could do a cardiology 2 rotation, or an emergency medicine 2 rotation. We haven't had to pick those yet, but I am leaning towards, I think, cardiology 2 and emergency medicine 2. What your day-to-day looks like is obviously going to depend on the type of rotation you're on, but in general, they will all involve some kind of topic discussions, some kind of journal club, you know, patient case presentations, working up patients daily. Again, the whole point of a residency really is for all the extra clinical training. So they really are focused on this like continuous growth and learning. So you are going to have a lot of extra projects that you take on, which is really where that like extra workload comes into play versus just being a clinical pharmacist or having a normal day job in general. Most of the time in residency, you are going to have a lot of extra work that you have to do at home. And, you know, it's not just that extra work that was assigned for that one specific rotation, especially when you have rotations that are kind of ongoing. So I could always get drug info projects or I could always get leadership projects because those rotations are year long. So even if I'm on, you know, emergency medicine and my preceptor is giving me something for that, I could also have a drug info project or a longitudinal project that could be due around the same time. So in general, residency is really awesome. All just about time management one, but also juggling, you know, all the different responsibilities that you're being given. For example, a couple weeks ago when I was saying I had those four presentations coming up, two of them were for my cardiology rotation, but two of them were also for my drug info rotation. So my journal club and my anticoagulation, kind of like patient counseling, those were both from cardiology. But then my pain management presentation and my PNT presentation were both assigned to me from my drug info rotation. That was a year-long rotation. So you are always going to kind of get a mix of things going on at once, and that's just kind of how it is. And one of the biggest assignments that you actually take on as a resident is one of those three components that I mentioned earlier. So your year-long research project is a huge obstacle to take on. It does require a ton of work, and especially for me at my hospital, it is a very independent, resident-driven process. So they want us to really drive, you know, the protocol being written and, you know, what data parameters we want to collect. And actually for us, it was something that they allowed us to kind of choose the topic ourselves, which I thought was really nice. A lot of programs have like a very specific list of certain projects that they want to do, and then they kind of will make you like rank which project you want to do, especially larger programs. But for us, we did have the option of choosing what we wanted to do. So I thought that that was a really great thing as well, because I mean, if you're going to spend so much time and effort on one thing, I mean, I would hope that it's at least a subject that you're very interested in. So I thought that that was definitely a huge strength of my program in that sense. And again, since this is one of the main components of a residency, every single program that you run into is going to have some mandatory year-long research project. And then the third component, which I have not talked about yet, is the staffing component. This tends to differ program to program and really will kind of be based on the needs of the hospital in terms of staffing. But for me and my hospital, I do staff every other weekend. So if it seems like I am always there, I kind of am. But because we do staff every other weekend, I do actually get one day off during the week, which is a really nice break just to kind of get on track with everything. In general, I do see, I think, the most every third weekend being kind of the most common staffing requirement. But I have also heard of programs that do staff every other weekend without having a day off the next week. So it really just is going to differ program to program. And my boyfriend is a resident as well. And I know that at his hospital, they do have a lot of staff on the weekend. So he isn't needed necessarily as often on the weekend. So he actually ends up staffing about once a month. But every single week, he does have to do a double, literally from 7 a.m. to 11:30 p.m. So I do not envy that at all. And I am totally okay with how my program is set up. But it really just is going to differ place to place. And that really covers it in terms of the three basic components that you will see in every single residency. Every single residency, again, will have rotations, will have a year-long research project, and it will have some kind of staffing component. And that really does it, guys, for Residency 101. I think we've covered all of the basics. But do not worry, I have a whole residency series planned, like I talked about. It's going to include many different episodes. All of them are going to be on a specific topic, and I promise they will be coming out exactly when you need them to. I looked at, you know, my whole application process last year, and when I was kind of doing things or going through certain things, and I had certain questions, so everything is planned out. I promise it is going to be amazing, and I hope it will be so helpful for you guys. The next episode that you can look forward to is going to be the 411 on applications, and I do promise that this will be coming out before the forecast site opens online. So don't stress, I got you guys covered on all aspects of the pharmacy residency application process, okay? For now, I think my biggest advice would be, one, figure out if you truly do want to pursue a residency, and then two, start thinking about what type of residency you want to pursue. Like I said before, the classic like inpatient residency is the most common, but there are the community residencies, or there are ones more focused in AM care or maybe managed care. So think about that. And on the next episode, I'm going to be talking more about how to narrow down the programs that you're applying to. Obviously, this is going to differ if you're someone who wants to stay local versus you're kind of open to the whole country. But in general, it really comes down to what is most important to you, whether it be in terms of how it's set up or what experiences it's specifically offering you. In the meantime, I encourage you all, if you're not already following me on Instagram, to go find me at TheLuxPharmacist and follow my residency journey there. You can also find me on my blog, which is theluxpharmacist.com. And when you get to that front page, it will actually prompt you to enter your email. If you want to be someone who receives my new monthly newsletter, you can sign up there. Before I end, I just want to say thank you so much to the Pharmacy Podcast Network. You guys have been an absolute dream to work with, and I am so honored to be a part of the podcast network. And a huge thank you to you as well. If you are someone who is listening to this podcast, I know you're taking time out of your day to tune into me, and I honestly could not do what I do without all of your continued support. So I appreciate you all so much, and I truly hope that this podcast serves as an invaluable resource for all of you. In honor of October being Pharmacy Month and the second annual Women Pharmacist Day being only 2 short days away, I have a very special guest here with me who personally has been a huge inspiration to me on my own journey as a woman in pharmacy. Suzanne Solomon is the Chief Academic Officer for the Accreditation Council for Medical Affairs, the founder of the Pharmacist Mom Group, and the creator of Women Pharmacist Day. Susie, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
No, it is all my honor. Like I said, you are such an inspiration to me and honestly, one of probably my biggest role models here, like in the pharmacy world. So it is all my honor.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you.
Thank you. So first, I just wanted to start out by having you talk a little bit about yourself, your career, you know, how you got to your current role as Chief Academic Officer and how the Pharmacist Mom Group came to be really what it is today.
Sure. So my career in pharmacy, I would say, was probably what you want to call non-traditional. I did, when I graduated, I did residency. I did an ambulatory care residency with an emphasis on education. And I worked after that as faculty at a college of pharmacy and I had a clinic. I then went on and I became an MSL and I worked as an MSL for a large pharmaceutical company, and then became an MSL manager where I worked on the assessment of different MSLs since everyone came in as an MSL, either as a physician or a pharmacist or a PhD, and everyone had a different background. So I helped with developing examinations and assessments while at Abbott for the team members, just to kind of get everybody on the same page. I then went in back to academia, and I was the assistant dean of academic affairs at the University of Illinois for a little over 5 years. And then I ended up moving out to the East Coast. Currently, I work as the chief academic officer for the Accreditation Council for Medical Affairs. I help with all the assessment and accreditation of our program, providing continuing education for some of our board certification programs there. So kind of a good mix of academia and industry together. And I'm also the founder of the Pharmacist Moms Group, you know, which is a group of 30,000 women in pharmacy.
And that is so incredible to me. I mean, obviously I'm not a mom, and most of my followers are not, but some of them are. And I don't even think that you have to be a mom to connect with a group like that, because it's really just women supporting women in pharmacy, which I think is amazing. But it's funny because I have always had such an interest in ambulatory care and education. So to hear kind of like your journey of ambulatory care residency and loving education and academia and just kind of how your career has transformed is just very interesting to me. And it's kind of like, where will I end up one day? Because I think what a lot of people don't realize is there's so many different avenues in pharmacy and so many different things that you can end up doing. Like you said, a lot of the times they're non-traditional.
Yeah, they really are. No, you're right. And it's kind of funny. That's interesting. I didn't realize that you had an interest in amp care. So that was my original love when I was in school. I will say when I was back in school, I thought I was going to work retail pharmacy, and I did work for a retail chain. And but then when I was exposed to other career options for me, they just spoke to me more.
Yeah.
I never really knew where I was going to go with my next position or with my next role, but it was kind of where life took me. And my career took me. And so sometimes, you know, you don't necessarily plan for everything, but things just necessarily kind of fall your way. So for me, you know, I love academia. I love learning and teaching and all of that. So that really spoke to me in addition to pharmacy. So that's kind of where my role now really fits me pretty well.
Yeah. And I think it's like also you have to just start doing things too, because, you know, I knew that I liked ambulatory care, but I also knew that I liked a bunch of other specialties. And obviously my residency this year isn't in ambulatory care. It's in a million different things, but it started last year when I taught the pharmacy technician training program. I absolutely loved that. And I feel like any day I'm on rotation now as a resident that I get to like help an appy student or I'm teaching patients about their medications, like that's when I'm the happiest. So it's gotten me thinking a lot about next year and, you know, what I want like my career to end up being or what kind of jobs I want to pursue next year. But it really is like you could do a million different things, which I think is amazing.
That's my favorite thing about pharmacy. And I know that right now, a lot of people have a lot of different opinions on what's going on in pharmacy. But I think one of the best things about this profession is that there are so many things you can do outside of a traditional career. And I think that we need to really explore them and talk about them, you know, as a group and as a, you know, as a profession.
Mm-hmm. And last year, you actually did something which I think is just like mind-boggling amazing. You literally created Women Pharmacist Day.
Yeah. So so there's a story behind that as well. So
I would love to know it.
So I went to UIC, and I'm sure you have some listeners who went to University of Illinois for pharmacy school. And in the back hallway, they have a lot of photographs, basically every photograph from all of their graduating class each year. And as a student, and even when I worked there as an assistant dean, I would walk down that hallway, and in the beginning, you would see all of these black and white photos, and I would say there were probably one or maybe two women per class. And then it started to increase as the years progressed, and you kept walking down that hallway, and the photos became color, and there were more and more women in each class. But it always struck me, you know, in those first few photos, maybe the first 30 years, how many more males there were, and what those women were feeling and thinking, and some of the obstacles that they might have had to overcome. You know, I know for the past four decades, women have graduated at higher rates than males in the profession. But prior to that, you know, we really haven't discussed all of the things that women went through. And so I really wanted to take a day to honor women who are pharmacists and just really honor where we've come and, you know, how we've progressed as women in the profession. And so that was really the intention behind it. We selected October 12th because October is, you know, American Pharmacist Month. And the 12th was selected in honor of Elizabeth Cooking Greenleaf. She's recognized as the first female pharmacist in the United States. And she had 12 children. So, you know, we joke in the Pharmacist Moms group, you know, many of us have children. And so we joke that, you know, I don't think any of us have 12 children. So for her, we all are, you know, admiring what she had done. So, so that's really where the date came from.
Yeah. And I remember, and I don't even know how I didn't put two and two together last year as a student when you had all those amazing little posters that you can print out. I remember taking pictures with them and my preceptor wanted one and we were doing all these things on rotation. It was so fun. But it was also so inspiring to me just knowing like I was getting ready to go into my career and knowing that I had this huge group of women backing me and that, you know, women were really valued in the field of pharmacy. And I just remember it being such a great day of celebration and honestly just feeling really like honored and happy to be in the career that I am. So I absolutely love the day.
Yeah, it's a great day. And this year we're really excited because we did create our own website. So you can go to womenpharmacistday.com. And now we have our own website. It has all the information about how to participate. All the selfie cards are there. We actually have an award this year that we're giving away and to one person. So we had nominations and the advisory committee recently voted and selected the winner for the award. So we are super excited about that. This will be our first, award for a woman pharmacist. And we're excited to continue that in the future as well.
That is amazing. I absolutely love just like the progression from last year to this year. I think it's amazing that you guys have a website now. That is so convenient for like women in pharmacy to be able to go on and find everything that they need to there. But besides going onto the website and printing out those cards, what can women be doing this year, the entire year, going into next year to really increase our awareness of women in pharmacy and, you know, do good for us?
There are so many things that we can do. There are a lot of events that are happening. So I encourage everyone, whether it's your organization or your institution or the hospital you're working for, to really have an event, this year, whether it's on the day, before the day, after the day, but sometime where you take time out to really honor and celebrate women and what we've done for the profession. So I would encourage everyone, if they have an event planned, to let us know. We are tracking them on the website this year too. So if anyone is having an event at their school or at their hospital, we would love to put that and publicize any of those events to really get the word out there. I think that other things that can be done throughout the year is really just empowering each other, helping one another. Really, that's what the Pharmacist Moms Group is about, is to really help women and empower each other. I think that it's really critical to do that.
Oh, 100%. And that's why I think so many women will connect with your site, even if they aren't a mom, because that is exactly what it is about. It is about empowering women. And I also think that the events will probably be a huge hit this year, just thinking like statistically, men versus women in pharmacy. I mean, I know my hospital has way more women than it does men in terms of pharmacists. And I know going through school at MCP, it was the same way. So I'm sure a lot of women will be celebrating this year, as they should.
Yeah, definitely. And that was really our goal as this year, to get everyone out there, everyone celebrating, everybody talking about it. We were selling shirts and, just wearing the shirt. Different things like that, and just really supporting one another. And you're right, pharmacy now is a predominantly female profession, and I'm really celebrating that as well.
And if I wanted a t-shirt, could I still get one? Can I go on to thewomenpharmacistday.com?
You can still get one. Last day for orders will to arrive on time will be this Friday, October 4th, in order to have free standard shipping. To have them by October 12th. But if you want the shirt after, definitely you can order afterwards. We also have some other shirts and things that we have on the website as well. We also have posters to download. Those are free, so you can look for those posters too.
Yes, I loved those posters last year. They were amazing. And I think I even printed them in color, which for anyone in a hospital is like, you have to go to a special printer to get color. And we did last year. Was that important?
That's great. That's awesome. Yeah. See, that's what it's about, really trying to get the word out and do things that we can.
Yeah. And it was even like, I mean, going to a color printer is such a small thing, but it really boosted the morale that day. And I just remember feeling so good about the career that I had chosen. So I absolutely cannot wait for October 12th this year.
Me too. I'm excited.
Me too. And lastly, for all the people listening right now, where can they go online and find all of your incredible content and connect with you?
Oh, sure. So outside of thewomenpharmacistday.com, that's our website, but you can definitely follow me on Instagram. I actually have, we have the Pharmacist Moms account, and I also have my own. You can follow me at Pharmacist Mom Susie. You can follow our page on Facebook. We have a Pharmacist Moms page. You can join our group, Pharmacist Moms group as well on Facebook. Pretty much anywhere. You can follow me on LinkedIn as well. I'm very active on LinkedIn as well. So anywhere you can message me, feel free to email me. I'm pretty easy to find on social media.
Perfect. Susie, thank you so much for being on the show today. And I absolutely cannot wait for Women Pharmacists Day.
Me too. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
That's all for this episode of the Lux Pharmacist Podcast. Be sure to share this podcast on your social media networks, and let's reach more innovative pharmacists with a flair for style, a creative approach to life, and a passion for patient care. Learn more. Check out theluxpharmacist.com.
Thank you for listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network. If you enjoy the leading podcast network dedicated to the business and profession of pharmacy, please write us a review on Apple Podcasts and let us know which channel is your favorite. And remember, the pharmacist is the hub of healthcare.